It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Welcome to this very special Veterans Day edition of the Kennedy Saves the World Happy Hour. And I'm very happy to be joined in the podcast studio by none other than Pete Hegseth. He is the co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend. He is an Army combat veteran, a good friend of mine, and a person to whom I'm dedicating this Veterans Day beverage. Wow.
Thank you very much.
Of course, this is a
awesome
mocktail.
Awesome to be here with you. Of
Pete.
Course.
Let yes. me tell you what would go into the Army Navy.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I know typically Army wants to beat Navy.
Normally mix well.
They make fun of Navy, but this is a drink that brings us together okay. to celebrate the veterans we have who have served, who go, some would say, very underserved by the federal government.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
And I know you fight the good fight on behalf of them every day. So bringing two of the branches together with this cocktail, which would be, if it were, in fact, alcohol, it would be, theoretically, per drink, 2 ounces of dry gin, 1 ounce of lemon juice, and just shy of 1 ounce of orgeat syrup, which is like almondy
okay.
syrup. It's also one of the main ingredients in a Mai Tai.
Okay.
And we would have, if this were a real cocktail, a dash of bitters, a dash of orange bitters, and then, of course, a tangerine peel. So this is just lemonade
mm-hmm.
and orgeat syrup?
Yeah, just for the ambiance.
Yeah,
of it.
Exactly. So we give it a shaky. Like we wave the flag, we shake
is
the canister.
Is this a Kennedy original recipe?
No. The Army Navy is a tried and true recipe.
Really?
Yes. But this, you know, I wanted to find something for you that I thought
the
would really
Army Navy.
Encapsulate togetherness.
Will...
And of course, the glasses, the coupes are Army green.
Oh, they are?
Yeah. These are Army. I have them in
little
various colors. But
transparent Army green.
That's right.
I'm impressed.
So what I didn't know, what I learned recently about the Army is, oh, by the way, cheers to you, and thank you for your service.
Cheers.
Seth.
Thank you for mm-hmm. being an amazing patriot every single day.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Can
That's
you taste the freedom?
That's a great mocktail right there.
Yeah.
I can taste it.
Yeah.
Let's make this an hour-long episode.
If this had gin in it and bitters.
If it did, yes.
It would put hair on your chest.
Yeah, absolutely right,
yeah.
It would.
So. And I'm a classy lady, so I can't have that. So I learned that how the Army and the Navy are different from each other, and I love learning fun facts. Army officers eat after the rest of the enlisted men and women.
Absolutely, tried and true. If you're caught as a, especially, well, I guess it pertains to every rank, but when you're a platoon leader in charge of 40 guys, if you're caught eating before any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just bad juju. Like, the NCOs will pull you aside and be like, sir, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you eat last. I don't care if there's anything left.
Yeah, you gotta feed the...
It's in the blood. You're taught that from minute one. Now, I don't know. Is the Navy different?
The Navy has a mess hall for officers.
Of course they do.
And one for the normies.
It's always been a little bit more of an elitist
yes.
branch. You know, you saw that in... I've always
men.
Related more to, a few good men, mm-hmm. to Colonel Jessup than mm-hmm. I did to whatever
Fancy Pants,
Lieutenant
Tom Cruise.
Fancy Pants.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thing in the Navy. But I think it's, and this is not to diss the Navy, but when you've got guys in ground combat like we had, they have to be ready to die for each other and mm-hmm. take your orders at a moment notice, running toward the guns.
Yes.
And so they better have complete faith in you that you would do what they're willing to do in mm-hmm. that moment, right? There's no differentiation. So we, and I just think that it's different. It's more a little bit more of a disconnect. Now I'm going to talk about the Navy SEALs. I mean, those guys are unbelievable.
That's different.
It's a different deal.
You're not going to see Navy SEALs in
but
like
on
those
a Navy ship,
Cracker Jack uniforms at
you've
the
got
airport.
The guys in the engine, like working sure. the stuff, and then you've got the officers up in the top deck, you know, surveying everything.
Yeah, so and there's a difference. There's a disconnect, and I understand that as we celebrate Veterans Day, all the branches have their strengths and their challenges. What I didn't know, and this is another fun fact I learned recently, the Navy has more planes than the Air Force, and the Army has more boats than the Navy.
You're teaching me something.
Isn't that wild?
I knew the Navy was able to compete with the Air Force mm-hmm. on aircraft.
Yes.
I knew that. You're saying the Army has more boats, though.
Yeah.
But boats is a pretty ambiguous term. So you're talking about...
A floating vessel.
Floating vessels. Mm-hmm. I could see that. Small,
yeah.
seabearing craft. I don't even know the right terms as a land creature of what. I get corrected on it all the time on the air. Like, hey, you're a vets guy. Like, I don't know all the Navy ranks and Air Force ranks and every type of ship and boat. Do you call it a ship? Do you call it a boat? But that doesn't surprise me. There is, you would know this in understanding government. There's mission creep. Yeah. So every Army wants a Navy, even though there is a Navy. And every Navy wants an Air Force, even though there is an Air Force. Do you know what I mean?
That makes perfect sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Be the best one. You want to be the most vertically integrated, the most ready.
You don't want to be relying on another service in order to deploy your people. But it does create, you might say, as government does, redundancies throughout the military-industrial complex, where it's like, our service needs this, but if we actually work together, it might be more efficient.
Okay, so let me ask you this, because I know that you are a proud veteran, an incredible patriot, but also a pragmatic person. So you know that the government is too big. So how do you sort of streamline some of those redundancies without being called anti-military?
I think you have to be willing and able. I always have... It's not just like ambiguous terms like waste, fraud, and abuse and all that. Like, first of all, our procurement system, the way we develop weapons is so bureaucratic and so weighted toward a small set of military contractors that you're not even getting the weapons you need today until 10 or 15 years later.
Wow.
So there's a lot of ways. So we're always fighting the last war, and then we've got equipment that is not outdated the day we get it, but is not being delivered as quickly as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And then also you've got our generals, you know, part of the reason our generals never speak up at the top levels is because 80% of our generals go from taking off the uniform to a high-level job inside a defense industry.
Absolutely.
And so that feedback loop never stops, whether programs are needed or not, whether weapon systems are needed or not. And it doesn't give an incentive for generals to speak up.
Yeah.
Because if you speak up, if you're the squeaky wheel, or you're like, I'm not doing this politically correct garbage, well, then you're out of the club.
Yeah.
And then if you're out of the club, you're out of the payout at the back end. So there are a lot of sort of obvious ways to the lay people of how you could that are a foreign language inside Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. And one of the other big challenges you have, not only, you know, there are areas where the military could be more efficient, but recruiting. Mm. I mean, if the Army were in the state it's in now, and I'm talking about recruiting, I'm talking about the idea of these politically correct edicts and, you know, sort of bowing to certain groups in the name of equity as opposed to something that might be a little bit more important, like readiness.
Yeah.
Would you enlist today if it were this Army versus the one that you signed up for?
It's really interesting you asked that question. I'm writing a book right now that's coming out next year called... The working title is Battle for the American Military, like the education book I wrote. And it's about not how the military went woke, but how the military allowed itself to go woke.
Yes.
And I'm grappling, actually just am writing the last chapter, which is a letter to my boys.
Mm.
After the 20 years of my service, what do I do in recommending whether they do it or not? And I think because the Pentagon is different than our education system in that new leadership can really change it and turn it more quickly than you can a nationwide group, you know, network of, I mean, it's a top-down driven organization. They've been ramming crap down the throats of our commanders since Obama and into Biden, gender stuff, transgender stuff, women in combat stuff, all the environmental green stuff, like all this stuff that doesn't have anything to do with readiness. And I don't know the answer to that question right now. I want it to be yes. But I don't want, you have to be willing to say, do I want my kids dying for, you know, willing to die based on the political decisions our political class is making? And that's an open question right now. So I haven't finished it all yet. And the fact that I can't just go out and write it tells you a lot about how you really feel.
Because
my reflex would be, boys, yes, go do it.
Yes.
You know, you want to serve your country. There's nothing more honorable you can do. But there's a reason recruitment's down. Now, the military will tell you, well, it's because 75% of American kids are too fat or not smart enough or medically disqualified to join.
They would be great drone operators.
A lot of that is...
I mean, Jimmy Fallon made this point the other night on stage. The fat gamers are going to be phenomenal drone operators.
A lot of that is true. But you're exactly right. There should be different standards for you want to be an Army infantryman or you want to be a drone operator.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with that. But that's not the real problem. That's the military excuse.
I would be like an Army pastry chef. I think that would be so much fun. Do they
have
those?
You know what? They might have those inside Air Force chow halls. So There's also a hierarchy of chow halls. You talk about eating. Yeah. It's Army's down here, Navy's here, and Air Force is way up here.
Really?
So I feel like if you were an Air Force pastry chef, that used to be our treat on deployment. It's like find our way to an Air Force chow hall, like on another base, and you're eating like a king. It's unbelievable. So your dream is not dead.
It's like one of those airport lounges versus McDonald's.
McDonald's?
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much. It's food out of a bag or... Or if you go to the French chow halls, which we did in Afghanistan, they serve table wine.
Of course they do.
Of course they do. I mean, we can't have... General order number one for us is you can't touch any alcohol.
Were they good soldiers?
I'm sure they were good soldiers. Their country... Here's the problem. Their country didn't really let them leave the wire.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things about Afghanistan and NATO and this big alliance. We wore a patch on our shoulders. We were called ISAF, the International Stability Assistance Force. Mm-hmm. We joked that it was really, I saw Americans fighting. Because every other country wore them, but it wasn't because their troops weren't courageous.
Yeah.
It's because their political caveats back home wouldn't allow them to engage in combat.
Interesting.
They could train people, but they couldn't do combat. It was just the just boys from Alabama that were able to do combat.
Yeah, but it gives the illusion that we've got this big coalition.
100%. The whole thing was an illusion. You go to the headquarters, there's 50 flags. They'll talk about the 50-country NATO alliance in Afghanistan.
Yep.
Except only the Marine Corps is fighting. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's just, and that's why, not to get into the political aspect of it, but when Trump or others say, like, NATO should pay their fair share, of course, they're with us in an alliance, but they're not doing the fighting. One, because they're not capable in many cases, and two, because they haven't funded their military sufficiently at all.
Yeah,
and
because so they assume that the United States is going to.
No doubt. But the readiness thing is a real problem, and it comes back to if I wanted to go to college and learn to be woke, I would just pay to go to college and learn to be woke.
Yes, but now with the GI Bill, you can do both.
Well, you could do both. Yeah, you're already on your way after joining the military. So we have a joke amongst some of my military buddies when the Army's starting to put out ads that show like Southern boys jumping out of airplanes.
Yes.
And they're like, uh-oh, we must be time to go to war. We must be actually going to war because now we're recruiting the guys that actually join.
Yes.
As opposed to, you know, trans videos about my pronouns. It's like, that's convenient when you don't really care.
Yeah.
But when it matters, you need the bedrock patriots of your country, regardless of background and race and all that, to be proud to want to serve. Because ultimately, you're doing it knowing you could die for the cause.
But that's what makes people who are enlisting today that much more brave, because they know they're up against a machine that sees them as an oppressor, and they're still fighting the good fight.
And that's why I think when I look at that letter to my sons and others, I say, well, that this question echoes in the back of my mind. If not them, then who?
Yes.
That, okay, if you just abdicate the ranks to a bunch of wokesters or lowering the standards— We only have one military. It's not like if you don't like New York, you can move to Tennessee. Or if you don't like your school, you can move to a different school district.
Mm-hmm. Or homeschool.
If you don't like or homeschool. If you don't like the military, where are you going? You're going to start your own military?
Belize.
You're going to go to Belize?
Belize have a military?
Like, there's one Pentagon, there's one Army, there's one Marine Corps.
Yeah.
And either it remains a meritocracy with a pointy end of the spear or not. And so I think ultimately mine would be an encouragement, but it would be to join the most elite forces you're willing and able to join.
Like
because
what?
I think, well, like your Army Rangers or your Green Berets or your Navy SEALs or your Marine Raiders. Because a lot of the social tinkering, social justice nonsense, gender, doesn't make its way into those ranks where it really is about performance.
Yeah, you can't screw around.
You can't screw around when the mission is that sensitive and important.
Don't go anywhere. More Kennedy Saves the World right after this.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in freefall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
What do you do to celebrate Veterans Day?
What do I mean, do to other celebrate than, Veterans Day?
I like to think that you and the and
well, I take
your,
a third
friends,
sip of your mocktail. That's for sure.
Here we are to freedom.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it's good when it hits the lips. It's so good.
I get my free meal at Applebee's.
Nice.
I'm just kidding. That's again. I go back to the jokes that we make. I would say that part of it is that I've been so invested and involved in the cause of vets for so long that mm-hmm. I feel like I try to dedicate a part of every day to serving these guys. It's not just a one day exercise. And that's why I love working here with yes. patriots and people who it's not like, oh, here, Vets Day. Okay. One segment, move on. It's an ethos of an understanding of appreciation. I try to make sure I'm on the air talking about it, mm-hmm. reminding people about it. I reach out to all the guys I know, and inevitably it turns into, even though it's not Memorial Day, you end up thinking about guys that aren't there for the veterans.
Yeah, and those guys, by and large, who did get to celebrate Veterans Day for a while, and they're not here anymore.
And that aspect of yeah. the people, and it ends up being as many guys, you end up knowing as many guys in your unit who did enjoy some Veterans Days, mm-hmm. and then ultimately succumb to demons. Mm-hmm. And you know, that it's a reminder to say, hey, the fight's not over for those guys too. Again, this place does as well and better than any other, certainly media organization out there, in remembering that.
Yeah, and certainly any media organization of this size. And I think it's critically important because, you know, we don't talk enough about what the withdrawal of Afghanistan did to people who served there. And you know, there is something about that is so demoralizing. And that, you know, if I had boys, that would be my trepidation, is entrusting their lives with incompetent people who are
exactly
running
right.
things right now. And that's what scares me. I don't know that they are good with strategy. I don't know that they value life in the same way. And that's the thing that scares me for people who are making that choice and grappling with it right now.
Totally right. And then you look at what was handled in the aftermath.
Yes.
You know, a retaliatory strike where we got the bomb maker. Oh, wait, no, it was a family and an aid worker. And you knew that for 4 or 5 days and you didn't.
It was not a righteous strike.
It was not a righteous strike. You know, the families of those 13 killed mm-hmm. at Abbey Gate still can't get answers, still can't get. And it doesn't surprise me because I've worked with so many friends with so many Gold Star parents, Gold Star mm-hmm. wives, other vets who are saying, I just want an answer. I just want accountability. I just want an understanding. They served proudly. They died for their country. And now I get this. I get no answers. I get a cold shoulder. I get a president looking at his watch at Dover Air Force Base. Mm. Those are all the things that add up. And I guess a lot of my hope is in whoever the next commander in chief is willing to say this nonsense stops. You know, this is an area an executive can execute. And this DEI stuff, this critical race theory stuff, this white rage stuff, this ignoring studies about the differences between men and women in combat stuff, like that's done. We're gonna put together a fighting force that is the best the world has ever seen and encourage our men and women of all backgrounds mm-hmm. to meet the standard and come in and join that force. It's
so
not hard.
If another president were elected who was more amenable to your political leaning, mm-hmm. would you serve in some capacity? And how would you make the VA better? Because that is one thing that I hear is there are a lot of very frustrated veterans who are trying to get care, who are for whatever reason denied care, and they end up banging their head against the wall because, you know, say you go and you get treatment from someone, there's no incentive for doctors to stay. So they leave. So, you know, the care is hard to access and very inconsistent.
Amen. It's a soulless bureaucracy where guys who gave everything are a number and are treated like that. I mean, that's when I was running vets organizations, the VA was what we focused in on. And I interviewed twice to potentially even be the VA secretary under mm-hmm. Trump. And we champion two things as sort of core ingredients. One, accountability, the ability to actually fire people, mm-hmm. which did become law, but was barely used inside the VA because the bureaucracy fights back on it, obviously.
Yeah.
And then two is veterans' choice, the idea that you could go out into the community and get care at a timely basis, because why are you driving 3 hours to a VA facility when mm-hmm. there's four better clinics along the way where you could be seen and the dollars could follow you? That passed. And showed some promise until two things, COVID and Biden. COVID, they locked down hospitals and denied community care. And then Biden, they've just rolled everything back. And so it's not about the VA. It's about veterans. Mm. So if you can it's much like school. Like if the dollars can follow the vet to community care and they can get better care and it's not inside the four walls of the VA hospital. And a lot of it's a psychological shift from a Vietnam War generation mm-hmm. where the VA was almost a safe space for them mm-hmm. in a certain way. It was their place in a society that had rejected them. And so they've sort of fought for it as an institution, as opposed to guys of my generation that are saying, it's not really my affinity. Mm-hmm. Like, thank goodness we learned those lessons from Vietnam. I just want the best care. And like, I can order a lamp on Amazon and it's here tomorrow, but I can't get an appointment for 3 weeks. That might've been okay for you, but that's not gonna work for me.
No.
And so it's a total overhaul of the VA, of a reversing and upending of the incentive structure is what has to happen. And it's certainly, I mean, under this administration, all they do is invest in bureaucracy and more money. That's it, which has never delivered at the VA.
No, and it's not a solution. So I want you to stay at Vox, obviously. I want you broadcasting. I want to see you in these halls, but something needs to change.
Something has to. Yes. Something has to. And, you know, it hasn't been much of a topic at all. I mean, it hasn't been brought up. You'll hear, you know, Nikki Haley's got a husband serving. Ron DeSantis is a veteran. Donald Trump talks about it because of the stuff that he's done. But it always seems to fall back to a second tier issue. Mm-hmm. Let's hope we can agitate. But it's one of those things where if you got the right political incentives, it's hard to vote against something that overturns a failing system. It's just what you find is it's a funny story. Trump called me after when I was being interviewed for the VA secretary job, and he called me one time and he goes, "Why is it that every veterans organization hates you?"
I mean, first of all, that's a great Trump impression, but second of all, that's totally something you would say.
Absolutely.
And it's like, how do you answer something like that?
I love you, but they all don't like you. And it's because the more you understand Washington, mm-hmm. of course, the VFW, the Legion, AMVETS, mm-hmm. all the groups that have been in D.C. for decades are wedded to the VA bureaucracy.
Yes.
And so they have good intentions at this level, but they're too embedded with the existing system to ever
to
be
really
for reform.
Change it. Yeah.
And so, and that's what I try to explain. It's like, well, they just want it to continue the way it is, mm-hmm. Mr. President-elect, Mr. President. That's why. But when you show up in Washington, all the guys in the funny hats show up and they tell you, we need more money for this and more money for this and a new group here, a new group there. And you go, okay, great. I'll do whatever I can for the vets.
Yeah.
It takes another 2-3 layers to say, now that whole system is built to defend the system. And we didn't quite get there on that round, but we'll see.
Well, I hope you're there. At least your voice and your influence are there for the next round of people who are rational.
We'll
because if there's one thing this country should be doing, it's taking care of vets. And
we're letting millions of people into our country and providing right to housing here in New York. And you've got 30,000
vets going
homeless.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like free housing, free health care, free school. But yes, that you have homeless vets whose mental illness is not being properly addressed.
Correct.
We're doing it wrong.
It's a reflection of priorities.
Which is why you have to make the right mocktail, talk about the important issues, and always toast to freedom.
Well, I will tell you this. You are, and your viewers should know, I mean, Kennedy is one of the most sincerely invested patriots I've ever met.
Oh.
Like, you are, to your soul, to your core. Like, we've had plenty of political, on the margins, differences on different things related to war and peace. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. But what I love in those small spats or disagreements or agreements is like, we agree on what's good and right and true and who the good guys are. And it's pretty cool to work in a place where you walk in the halls next to those people and you say, I know where their true north is.
Yes, absolutely. And you can have disagreements and be confident in that and still have, that's what I love about Fox. And a lot of people, they think that Fox just tells us what to say, and that is not the truth at all. And you can have these differences and hash them out, and you're absolutely right, and still emerge with the same deep respect for other people because, you know, we all got here from different paths, but we're going to the same place.
Absolutely. And you've gotten me over the years closer and closer to your place than where I was when we first met. I'll just say that.
That's fantastic.
I'm a recovering neoconservative moving into Kennedy's camp over time. Well, you get mugged by reality.
Yes.
You see, you get so invested in what you're fighting for, and rightfully so, and understandably so. But we're not living if we're not learning and stepping back from that and say, okay, what really happened? Like, what impact really came from that?
Yes.
And what's really behind it? And to learn from people like you and others here is a blessing.
You're the best. Pete Hegseth, Happy Veterans Day.
Happy Veterans Day. If only Fox would let us have an adult beverage.
But a real adult beverage. We'll just have to sip this mocktail for now. This has been Happy Hour on Kennedy Saves the World. Along with Pete Hegseth, I'm Kennedy.
You're the best.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. Oh, go ahead and leave me a review while you're there. I'd love to hear what you have to say. You've been listening to Kennedy Saves the World on the Fox News Podcast Network.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform, and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.